This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition to the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It is the beginning of free agency. Well, I guess technically not the actual beginning of free agency. As we're recording, we're still in the middle of the legal tampering period. But by the time you guys listen to this show, free agency will be official. The trades, the deal is, everything that has been expected to happen will have happened. And this is episode 222. We're talking free agency, Cardinals, and what has been a crazy pair of days. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And oh my gosh, what is going on around the NFL right now?
Chaos. I mean, even the Cardinals are kind of in on it. It's fun at this point. I think obviously the trades that are happening, but the kind of changing landscape of the NFL is it's completely different than what it has been in the past, and I think it's going to continue to kind of get crazy over the next several weeks, because I think we're going to see a lot of movement in different instances here.
There's a lot of what's going on. We're going to talk about some of this stuff more towards the end of the show, kind of like how the Cardinals cut loose with Steve Wilks, and it felt kind of weird. And if they end up cutting loose with Josh Rosen a year in, there's a lot of that going into some of the moves that's happening right now. It's, you know, we made a mistake. Let's just cut our ties and blow it up. Something you don't often see in the NFL because it doesn't really work financially. But, hey, that's what we're going to talk about. So we've got the moves. This show, episode 222, we're talking about free agency. We're talking about especially. We're going to go down each of the moves the Cardinals have agreed to. So far we've got Terrell Suggs is coming to the Cardinals. Jordan Hicks, J.R. Sweezy, a trade for Marcus Gilbert, so we'll talk about that as well. Backup quarterback Brett Hundley, along with the releases. We'll talk briefly about the releases that they made. And what do the Cardinals still need to do in free agency that they have not addressed yet? And this is that when we talk about that, I'm sure that might get a little dicey, because by the time you listen to this show, because we're recording on a Tuesday night before free agency technically has begun, there might be some other stuff that happens. So keep your this may be outdated, but the analysis that we're given on the rest of the stuff should be great. And then we're going to react to this, what is going on with the rest of the league, Odell Beckham, and everything else that D Ford, whole bunches of money being thrown around and trades galore. We're going to react to that. So let's get started with Terrell Suggs. This is a move that the Cardinals should have done about 16 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you and I have kind of talked about it. We'll get more into it, but like, this is our biggest fear with the whole idea of the trade down, right? That Nick Bosa, a polished, accomplished pass rusher, to trade down to try to address multiple positions, likely pass rusher, and potentially something else in the draft, will yield a Terrell Suggs versus Calvin Pace, Bryant Johnson like results. And so, you know, we're not saying Nick Bosa is the equivalent of Terrell Suggs. We're not saying that, but just in general, typically when you trade down, you end up getting the kind of worse end of the trade typically. So that's the biggest thing. And finally, Terrell Suggs, after 16 amazing seasons in Baltimore, including missing an entire season with an Achilles injury, you know, racking up 132 and a half career sacks, including 7 as a 36-year-old. it's good to have him home. I think it's, you know, I think it's big for if they are going to stay put at one and draft Nick Bosa, because I think it gives them a really accomplished guy that has been successful, that can be a mentor, and a guy that shows Bosa the ropes of the NFL and how to play the game. And, oh, by the way, he's still highly productive, so he can give Bosa, he can give Chandler Jones. I mean, you're talking about a potential foursome of Chandler Jones, Terrell Suggs, Nick Bosa, and Brooks Reed that would, you know, are probably going to rack up right around 30 to 35 sacks between the four of them, which is a huge number for just edge rushers, you know, not including interior guys. So I think it's a great, you know, signing at this point.
And, you know, I love it for multiple reasons. As much as I would like to say that it's going to signal that the Cardinals are going to take Nick Bosa at the top of the draft, because I think that's the smartest move right now, assuming his medicals check out. But really what this does, the signing of Suggs, still productive, still great. It doesn't change any approach at the top of the draft. Suggs is productive enough and should be productive enough that he will get sacks, and he will pressure the quarterback, and he'll get to the quarterback, and so you could fill another need. So you could go in the interior of the defensive line and go Quinnen Williams. You could go Kyler Murray. If they want a quarterback, they can go quarterback. And now they've still got this pair with Chandler Jones and Terrell Suggs. You've got this dynamic pair, and you can go pass rusher at the top as well, because and there won't be the pressure on that player to produce immediately. I think adding a guy like Suggs, I think this is a little bit different. I hope this is not Emmitt Smith, and I hope it's not Todd Heap. Suggs with seven sacks last year.
I think the difference is they're not depending on him. Like, even if they don't pick up Nick Bosa, even if they go a different route, Quinnen Williams or you know, Kyler Murray, even if they go one of those different routes, you're still talking about a rotational guy. You're not talking about a guy in Emmitt Smith who they needed to be the kind of bell cow back there. You're not talking about Todd Heap, who was their tight end one at that point. Like, he's probably going to start opposite Chandler Jones, whether they pick Bosa or not. But they're still likely going to, you know, have other options around there.
And what I also love, the price. You might say, and if you look at it, $7 million for Terrell Suggs, that's more than he's been paid in any one year for a long time. But $7 million for a guy who has the potential, even a part-time player, if he gets seven sacks last year, premier pass rushers run you about $1 million a sack. That's a number that Steve Keim gave a few years ago when they were before they gave Chandler Jones the contract. And that's roughly what you've gotten from Chandler Jones, is about $1 million a sack. If he's a 5 to 7 a sack team, you have yourself a bargain. In that, you know, you get your 15 sacks from Chandler Jones, and you get 7 sacks from Terrell Suggs and 3 sacks from Brooks Reed. Hey, that's what you were getting from Jones and Marcus Golden in that dynamic year of 2016 when they had that great pass rush. And so it does a lot of things. I think Suggs will be great for that defense. He becomes a leader, because that Baltimore Ravens were defined by Ray Lewis. Terrell Suggs is no less the leader. He's great in the locker room. He doesn't accept nonsense. And it'll be a new voice, as we kind of talked about. It's felt like they've been kind of purging the locker room of 2018. They're purging it of all the vibes of 2018 and any particular connection to Steve Wilkes and whatnot. and it brings in a new leadership voice. And Suggs would be great for any young guy, but heck, he's going to be great for Chandler Jones as well. So you're going to get production. It's a relative bargain, and it's a great story as we're kind of learning as the Cardinals are suddenly becoming hometown, the America's hometown team, where the people who played in Arizona, they're all coming back to play in Arizona right now. And at least everything lines up nicely, assuming he stays healthy, he can be productive. I don't know, Leslie, last year he was playing about 2/3 of the snaps. I don't know if they intend on having him play that much, if he's like kind of like John Abraham, his second to last year here, where he was still incredibly productive. Or if he moves down closer to 50 or 40%, where you decide, okay, here's the rotation. Brooks, Reed in base, Suggs in nickel. You could do that, and it's super easy.
Yeah, and to your point, this is something that one of the Ravens beat people. I think she actually covers Ravens Wire for you guys, Lindsay Yock, and she said, you know, Suggs doesn't like me, but he's one of the most iconic Ravens ever. Talent, attitude, leadership, things you can't teach. Play the age card all you want. If you think the Ravens didn't get worse today, I don't know what to tell you. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, like you said, is iconic. He is a guy that is still a leader, is not just in the locker room, but on the field. Like, he still believed in him. People still, you know, they still see him as the guy on that defense that everybody looks to. So it is, you know, it's a big move, and one that I think can pay off in a lot of different ways, and not just on the stat sheet, but still on the stat sheet as well.
Especially because not only – well, he's been good by himself. I think he'll also be impacted. He will benefit from having another elite pass rusher on the other side. So he won't be – the number one this time. He has that talent and get that attention. But guess what? Those two can play off each other, because now, like Vance Joseph wants, you want the offensive line to have to shift protection to one, which makes the life easier for the other. And playing the way they do with the 3-4, playing that outside edge, that means Chandler Jones or Terrell Suggs, they're not always going to be lined up against a left tackle, right tackle. At times they're going to be they're going to have to go up against tight ends and running backs, and they're going to win those battles.
Right. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we talked about with Bosa a little bit. But when you look at building of a defense, and something that Vance Joseph talked about with the Broncos and Bradley Chubb this year, pairing him with Von Miller, is that if people don't double team those edge players, then you get a guy like Bradley Chubb having 12 sacks as a rookie. Same type of thing. Like, if people aren't double teaming Chandler Jones and Terrell Suggs consistently, obviously it's not every play, but consistently on passing downs, Suggs is going to have, you know, he'll have, you know, 7 to 10 sacks, but you also know that a guy like Chandler Jones is going to have like 15 to 18 sacks if there is somebody taking pressure off of him on the other side. And then your interior linemen have it easier too, because you're not just – I mean, let's be honest. Last year, Vincent Maioa was not bad. But for the most part, teams just worried about Chandler Jones. I mean, and Jones still got his, but in the end, they were just worried about Chandler Jones.
Right. And it really, it's been like that the last 2 years, and which is amazing, which really tells you how great he's been, because being pretty much the only edge threat for 2 seasons, he's put up fantastic numbers. And that was on top of them. I think both of us would have to agree that Chandler Jones' presence in 2016 was a big reason for Calais Campbell's and Marcus Golden's production, which led to Jones having a few less sacks than perhaps he could have had. But this is going to be great across the board. Now, the question is, what are they going to do on the interior? And that's one of the things we're going to talk about. So I don't think there's really, unless his production falls off a cliff, which we have seen from players of that age. Now, Dwight Freeney continued to be great late in his career. John Abraham was great until the year that, you know, apparently alcohol was a problem for him. And things just kind of felt, it goes from, you don't see them gradually decline. It usually goes from they're pretty dang good to, oh my goodness, they're terrible. And I don't think we're there with Suggs. And I hope that's not the case, because this would be a fantastic way to end a career at home, where you grew up, where you went to college. You're still iconic. So you're iconic in Baltimore, and you're still an icon here. You just didn't do it in the pros. And to see it end well, we have not seen that happen elsewhere. The guys that finished their career in Arizona usually whimper off into the sunset.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of what the concern is, obviously, when you see this, when you hear this. So we'll see how this works out. It's on, like I said, on paper, it's not a bad thing. I don't think anything that the Cardinals have done on paper has been technically bad at this point. You know, obviously there's ranges of good, but nothing like crazy bad yet.
And coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, our next segment, we're going to talk about the new linebacker in town, Jordan Hicks. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The other and the biggest move, the one that is the most money, it is their splash. I think it is the splash that they're going to make in free agency this year. They signed former Philadelphia Eagles linebacker Jordan Hicks to a four-year deal worth $36 million. And that is their centerpiece, I guess, of free agency this year. A move at a position that was definitely a need. There was a lot of chatter about them being in on or really targeting C.J. Mosley. The money he got was disgusting. He got more money than Chandler Jones. I don't think there's a space linebacker, an off-the-ball linebacker that should get paid more than a premier pass rusher, but Mosley just did it. 5 years, $85 million, and good for him. But they get for $9 million, which is actually cheaper than what they paid Daylon Buchanan last year, I believe.
I think it was it's $400,000 more, but it's not. Okay. Yeah, but it's basically the same.
For a guy who, now, there is the issue, is durability. He played only 12 games last year, seven games the year before. In fact, only in 2016 did he play in all 16 games. But what a 2016 that was. 86 tackles, a sack, five interceptions. He's a linebacker. He's athletic. He is the size that he's got the traditional linebacker size, and he's got the athleticism. Assuming they stick around with Hassan Reddick, it would appear that this is the pairing of linebackers that you can go with for a few years with Jordan Hicks and Hassan Reddick, right?
That's the goal. I mean, you've been waiting to find out what is going to happen with Hassan more than anything else. I mean, when you look at the acquisition of Jordan Hicks, it's a guy that is a lot like Hassan in terms of athletic ability and you know, those type of things. The thing with Hicks is he's been a linebacker his whole life, whereas Hassan Reddick, you know, was a safety to a defensive end, to an inside linebacker, to an outside linebacker. So when you look at it from that perspective, he's a guy that still has never really learned how to play the position, that's never really gotten a chance. And so whether it is this season or whether it is a season from now, the idea is that Hicks can kind of also show Reddick the ropes and kind of give this team a young, because Hicks is only 26. So in theory, this could give the Cardinals a young linebacker core for the next, you know, two, three seasons as they figure things out.
And of course, the one concern you have is he going to be able to stay healthy? And this is where I'm going to wonder if the name that we've both talked about and has been thrown around here locally, Brandon Marshall, I still think is going to be a player that the Cardinals go get. I wouldn't be surprised at all. He was essentially last year a third linebacker in their rotation anyway. And so, yeah, if that's a possibility, that way that's a little bit of insurance. You get some mentoring, as long as it's not. I'm sure he's probably at the stage of career at age 30 where he's going to be willing to settle on a spot that as long as he's got a job. But I really like the signing as long as he stays healthy. But at least this isn't an old fragile player. It is an injury prone player with a high upside.
Right. And I mean, the thing with CJ Mosley and the reason that people were, the Cardinals were so interested in him and kind of in on him was that he's missed 3 games in his career. So he's a 4-time Pro Bowler. I think he's made a couple like second team All Pros, if I remember right. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, all those type of things. And so when you look at it, it makes sense that he's a 4-time second team All Pro. Sorry. So when you look at it from that perspective, it makes sense that he is getting paid Uber dollars more than Jordan Hicks. So, I mean, in 5 years, you know, he's played, CJ Mosley's played 77 games out of 80 possible games. So he's literally missed 3 games in his career. You know, Jordan Hicks has never played 16 games.
Once he did it in 2016.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's what I meant. He's done it once as a, you know, as a 24-year-old. He battled injuries in college. So he's a guy that, and it was part of the reason he was drafted. I believe he was drafted in the late third round by the Eagles. And that was part of the reason why is he's been a guy that has struggled to stay healthy in his career. There's never been really a ton of questions about his ability when he's on the field. And this isn't hyperbole. This isn't me, you know, blowing smoke or anything like that. When he's on the field, he's one of the 10 best linebackers in the NFL. He's that good. The two questions you ask, and I think you hit it on the head, is one, can he stay healthy? And two, is this going to be a Deion Buchanan-like situation where just the toll of the injuries have zapped some of that athleticism that you have seen that makes him that special linebacker that he is? Those are the only two concerns. But I mean, in theory, this is Robert Alford, right? Like, this is a guy that plays, that has a history of playing well. He hasn't played well in a year or so. If he's right, if he's healthy, he's going to be a game changer for them, just like Alford will be. And then in the same sense, if he doesn't work out, it's just 2 years. And you might say, well, that's a lot. But, I mean, realistically, after 2020, they can cut him and they don't really owe him anything. And so that's the biggest thing with this is if they get through 2 years with him and he's productive, they'll probably restructure his contract, kind of spread out that money if he's perpetually injured or, you know, anything of that nature where he's not playing well. It's 2 years and you move on. So it's, yes, it is a high cost, but when you look at CJ Mosley at $17 million, Quan Alexander at $13.5 million, they're in line with what they're paying, what everybody else is kind of paying, and they're doing it at a lower overall kind of risk outside of how I read the 49ers structured the Quan Alexander contract, you really couldn't have asked for a better deal on Hicks, because like you said, $9 million is not a bad salary for a very highly productive player. So you know, that's the biggest thing. It's an easy out after 2 years if you know, heaven forbid it doesn't work out.
And it isn't as if the 49ers are not taking a risk on Alexander as well. He's coming off an Achilles injury. That's not an easy thing to come back from. We see players do it all the time, but he is. I mean, he's coming off an injury. We saw Jermaine Gresham be basically invisible after coming back from that. Now, Mosley is a different story, but at the same time, in terms of linebacker skill, Jordan Hicks, very much superior in overall linebacker skill to CJ Mosley, because Jordan Hicks can also be dynamic in the passing game. Mosley's great, but he's, for those who the kind of the knock on it, he is a two down player who does okay on that third down, right?
Yeah. And so, I mean, That's the thing, is this is a guy who I wrote about it today. I mean, he's literally, from like a Pro Football Focus grading standpoint, he's literally the best linebacker the Cardinals have had since Darrell Washington in 2012, when Jess Root was in charge of the site, wrote, you know, the Pro Football Focus team gave Darrell Washington their all pro linebacker award. Like, they thought he was one of the best linebackers in the NFL in 2012. And Jordan Hicks has two of those type of graded seasons on his resume. Again, all it is with Hicks that you're worried about is simply health. If he's healthy, he's a dynamic, game-changing player on all levels of the field. He's a guy that can make plays in the backfield. He's a guy that can run and cover. And he's a guy that can blitz. So, I mean, he literally is, you know, the prototype three-down linebacker in the NFL. There's literally only one question on about him, and I don't think it's a problem.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, we're going to now talk about the offensive line additions. They made two moves, one in free agency, one via trade. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. And moving next to the next one is the Cardinals had two huge needs on the offensive line. They have filled those needs. They're not exciting fillings. They're not exciting moves, but they've done that. The first was last week, which they started doing what we're hoping they'd do. They traded away their sixth round compensatory pick for Marcus Gilbert. He's got 1 year left on his deal previously of the Pittsburgh Steelers. A very capable tackle. In fact, it was really kind of interesting. It was kind of fun, the fact that I saw the tweet from Adam Schefter that said that the Steelers were shopping Gilbert. And so I wrote up an article real quick that said, hey, he's available if the Cardinals want him. 20 minutes later, the Cardinals had him. And that on my crusade to trade their comp picks, we are 1/4 of the way done. And they got them something. This is almost identical to what the Cardinals did a year ago with Jared Valdir. They traded Valdir away for a sixth round pick. He was in the last year of his deal. He was more than definitely a capable lineman and deep into his career, had some injury issues, and they got a sixth rounder for him. The Cardinals turned around and sent a sixth rounder to Pittsburgh to get a very solid right tackle. He's getting up there in age and has had some injury issues. The good thing about this is that this is the Cardinals tend to take risks on players with durability problems, as opposed to Andre Smith a year ago. This is a much higher ceiling and no downside with dead money.
Yeah, and the thing is, as you said, he's a guy that, when healthy, is one of the better pass blocking right tackles in the NFL. He's a guaranteed starter, barring injury. But, you know, if you get injured in training camp with preseason, it's just, you know, it's typically fluky. As long as it's not another like hamstring issue type thing, you're talking about a guy that it will be better than any sixth-round pick that the Cardinals could have made or have made under Steve Keim. So, I mean, it's a no-doubt type of play, and it just makes a lot of sense to me. And it seems like it's the best move for what they need.
And what it does, the Cardinals, they do believe in Corey Cunningham. They do really like his upside. Steve Keim was on the radio at the end of the season, even saying that he said that Corey Cunningham could be a starter in 2019, but now they don't have to have him as a starter, which is, it's always dicey when you go into year two, players year two in their career, and you are already penciling them in as a starter especially when they're a little bit developmental, when you're going, okay, he's now a starter. That's scary because they haven't proven anything. He has some tape, some good, some is a little worrisome. But now you've got another year to develop Corey Cunningham. He can step in as your right tackle starter if something happens, or left tackle for DJ Humphries. And then potentially, if he grows enough in 2019, Cunningham can be your left tackle in 2020. Because DJ Humphries, if he has a solid year, is going to get paid.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where, you know, Hump is a guy that, like you said, he's either going to get paid or he's not going to play well enough for anybody to want to sign him, right? So it's kind of for the Cardinals, it's probably the last year of Humphries unless they can get a guy, or, you know, unless they get something done midseason on a team friendly type deal. But as we're seeing, any left tackle that can like stand up and block for 16 games is going to get paid. So it doesn't really behoove Humphries to sign anything ahead of time if he's playing the entire season anyways.
Right.
So, you know, with Gilbert, I think it buys you time. And like you said, it's cheap. It's not like it's expensive. It's basically what they paid Andre Smith last year.
Yeah. $5 million for a starting right tackle is cheap. Like we're seeing pretty much quality starters on any part of the offensive line anymore are now north of $10 million. And so to get a starting caliber player for $5 million, that's a deal. You take it every single time.
Right, exactly. And not only that, but when you can do it for a pick that's probably just going to spend some time in camps, I mean,
who's at best, based on their history, their six round picks tend to be offensive linemen that are on the bench for a year and then cut, or a super athletic special teams defensive back.
Right, exactly. So it makes sense, and I'm for it 100%. I think they need to do something with the other four.
Get rid of them all. Get rid of them all. Get me some guys. And too bad they messed up and lost out on Case Keenum, but we're going to talk about them a little bit. The other move they made on the offensive line was announced on Tuesday. They have agreed to, or rather the wording is in the legal tampering period, that they intend to sign, or rather J.R. Sweezy, longtime Seattle Seahawks, had a cup of coffee over in Tampa Bay. It didn't work out. He intends on signing a 2-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals, giving them yet another journeyman offensive lineman, but it's a plug and play type situation and allows them to kick the can in terms of having to draft high guard. So you can draft someone developmentally, or you can draft one at the top of the draft if you really like, not necessarily the top, but if you trade down, if you're at the top of the second round, you can address that position without any urgency.
Yeah, and as I talked about a little earlier, in the varying degrees, this is definitely the lowest of my, you know, grades, quote unquote, so to speak, for what they did in free agency. And it just comes down to, again, philosophy, team building philosophy and things like that. I don't think it's a bad, as you kind of eloquently put, they weren't really in on the high price guys. I mean, they were in on them as much as they can be, but I mean, a guy like Billy Turner ended up getting almost $30 million.
Come on.
From the Packers. And he's not bad.
No, he's young. That's the thing. He's young.
And then, you know, Roger Saffold got a 4-year contract at 32 years old.
At $11 million per.
Yeah. And 23 guaranteed, 24 guaranteed? So, you know, those are the deals that Steve Keim has made the last 2 or 3 years and why they continue to lead the league in dead money every offseason. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I tend to for the fact that they didn't go and do those things, and instead they allowed the market, so to speak, to come to them with Jordan Hicks, with you know, trading for Marcus Gilbert, going after J.R. Sweezy, who's, you know, in the scope of talent, let's just call a spade a spade. He's not great.
No, here's how I say he is a durable version of Andre Smith at guard.
Yeah, he's very run block forward. He's a guy that his best season was last year, and he gave up something like 26 pressures and 3.5 sacks and only had 6 penalties. I mean, that was his best season to date. And so, you know, like, you hate to say it like this, but you're going in with low expectations. You know what you're getting with him. He's a strong run blocker. That's his strength. That's what he's best at, and that's what he is, you know, going to provide for this team. He's not going to be a guy that's going to excel in pass pro. I mean, in the end, he's basically 2016, 17, 18 Mike Iupati. Like a guy that is
But more important, but a durable version.
Right. A guy that's going to play 16 games and give you – you know, continued strength in the run game and is going to struggle and give up some sacks in the pass game. It is what it is. Like, again, this is a team in transition. This is basically a rebuild. Your Jess and I are hoping that they're only one season away, that this is a up to, you know, up to 6-7 wins this season, and then 2020 they're competing for a playoff spot. But it, you know, so when you look at it from that perspective, a guy like Roger Saffold would be 34 when the Cardinals are getting ready to compete. You know, a guy like J.R. Sweezy will be his contract will be up, and they'll be able to go get a Roger Saffold type player, kind of like what the Tennessee Titans just did. You know, they'll be able to do something similar to what the Indianapolis Colts are doing this offseason, where they have $100 million in salary cap space. Oh, and oh, by the way, they're a playoff team type thing. That's what you're looking for in 2 years. You're not looking to have bad contracts that you're then cutting and then having to refill. But, oh, by the way, we have $8 million dead money in on the books for the quarterbacks from a season ago type stuff.
And so what you have now is an offensive line that looks more or less set. As it looks right now, it should be DJ Humphries at left tackle. It would appear likely that Justin Pugh will move from right guard to left guard, which not a bad thing considering in his 5 seasons in New York, he was best when he played left guard. You got Mason Cole likely to start. A.Q. Shipley will return from injury. I anticipate he will be a veteran mentor off the bench. J.R. Sweezy at right guard and Marcus Gilbert at right tackle. Granted, as we've seen the last actually 3 years, the question of if they stay healthy continues to be the trend, because the Cardinals just have had the worst luck with offensive line health. And only the center position remains during the season, because they lost AQ in training camp, but only the center position has gone unscathed during the season to injuries. But this is not an awful offensive line. DJ Humphreys can be good. Pugh is pretty good, can be pretty good at left guard. Mason Cole will be better, and they really believe in this kid. J.R. Sweezy is passable as a starter. He's a low-end starter, but you kind of look at the thing about Sweezy, you look at, he has been a starter on the offensive line of one of the most successful teams over the last 5 years, if you want to look at it that way. So this isn't, you know, a low-end starter who was playing with the Browns. This is a low-end starter who's been playing for a team that's been playoff bound year after year after year after year. And then you get Marcus Gilbert on the right side at right tackle. And that gives you, like, just right now, that gives you an AQ Shipley off the bench, a Corey Cunningham off the bench, and you
probably really, John Wetzel off the bench.
Maybe. Obviously, they didn't tender him, but I wouldn't imagine they want him back. And I believe that he thinks that they want him back. That's the word that he told me, you know, that I heard from him, is that he believes that he will be back. And so that's not a bad mix. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's a fine mix. It's a group. Again, they're in a transition year. They didn't overpay for anything. They're putting out, like you said, with Cole and Sweezy, you're it's going to be hard not to see them both playing 16 games. And then you know, you're going to see what you get in the other three guys. I mean, like we said, Gilbert is a risk worth taking in terms of risk reward. Humphreys, there's literally nothing they can do at this point with that. I mean, because he's technically not cleared from injury, so he's on the books no matter what. So you might as well have him. And same with Pugh. I mean, they couldn't move on from Justin Pugh if they wanted to. So you know, they were coming into this offseason needing to fill two spots. It was going to be interesting to see how they filled them. And, you know, you can always dream of going out and signing Juwan James and Trent Brown and Roger Saffold and getting the top three players at, you know, the three positions of need, so to speak. But in the end, I think what Steve Keim is doing is the more prudent approach to try and get things done, so to speak, in this transition year, let Rosen grow kind of thing. And then get ready to improve the offensive line and grow it around him in 2020 and 2021.
Cut on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're going to talk about the Cardinals having a new backup quarterback. What does that mean about their starting quarterback? We're going to talk about that. That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And the Cardinals jettisoned Mike Glennon after only one season. Now, we'll mention all three releases. They cut Antoine Bethea, who've landed with the New York Giants. They cut Mike Glennon, saving overall, it saves them nearly $6 million in cap space for them. And they will release Jermaine Gresham. I think the move there is to make him a post June 1st designation to kind of split up the $5.8 million in cap dead money that they're going to leave for him. But oh my gosh! So three guys out the door. They've cut ties with. But that leaves them with no backup quarterback. In fact, which is when we were talking on our show just a week ago, quarterback was not a position of need at all. Now it becomes critical. They have addressed that backup quarterback need, that quarterback position. And I wouldn't, there is no way in the world I would have ever predicted this. And their backup quarterback entering 2019 is going to be Brett Hundley, who agreed to a deal for 1 year, between $2 and $3 million it's going to be. And their new backup quarterback, whatever that means, because he was the starter at UCLA before Josh Rosen was the starter at UCLA. So there's a UCLA connection there. But Hundley is also a more mobile, played, was basically a spread quarterback. So there's the mobility, there's the mobility there, there's the spread offense. So it might, someone might think, oh, well, that lends itself to think that they're going to jettison Rosen and bring in Kyler Murray. So what does this mean to you? Because Brett Hundley makes a really weird backup quarterback to me.
It just means that they found a guy that's more adept at an offense, a spread offense. He was, for those of you that are ASU fans, he was a Noel Mazzoni. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yes, Noel Mazzoni.
Spread
Swing
kind of
pass, spread. Yeah,
air raid type, you know, hybrid air raid type of guy. That's what he was, that's what he thrived in at UCLA. So having a guy that is comfortable in that type of offense makes sense, because it allows the Cardinals, you know, if anything goes down with Rosen, and not talking about trading him, but just talking about like if he was to get injured, that it would kind of give Hundley his best chance to be successful, and it would give the Cardinals a quarterback that, you know, outside of bringing in a guy like a Gardner Minshew out of Washington State, or, you know, another potential air raid type guy. I don't even know like really who's out there that fits that, but that Hundley's a guy that's been successful, that he has done it before. And
he also has the connection with Tom Clements, because he was quarterback in Green Bay. So he knows Clements. Clements knows him and his abilities.
And
he has a few starts under his belt. When he's got 9 starts, he wasn't good.
No, so not at all.
He's gone through a lot of the same sort of growing pains that Rosen did. The two are close. Rosen has talked about Hundley being a bit of a mentor for him. Here's the thing for me that I find interesting is the more I think about it, I personally think that having Hundley as a backup probably lends it to be more of a Rosen staying than a Kyler Murray, because it's not like Hundley, because you always want to have with a young quarterback, you want an established veteran sort type of mentor. Hundley is hardly that at this point, but he would be for Rosen. And it also would give Rosen the knowledge that he's the guy, or they trust, they believe in the experience that he had and his leadership to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, a fair assessment of the entire thing. I think, you know, this whole thing is going to come down to basically, you know, how you grade these guys, and we'll get into it more, but, you know, if you think that Kyler Murray is so good that you can't pass on him, then, you know, in the end, you're getting a backup quarterback, and that's what the situation is in general. I mean, I get that Bradford and Glennon were kind of similar in styles, but when you look around the league, you know, Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, Taylor Heineke, but before that it was Derek Anderson.
Yes.
You know, Eli Manning, Geno Smith before, and I mean,
Jameis Winston, Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right. There's like, it doesn't have to be similar types of quarterbacks. They just have to be able to, you know, fit in an offense that works together. I think that Hundley is a guy that fits with what the Cardinals offense is likely to be like under Cliff Kingsbury. He's a guy that's, again, had success in those situations. So you expect that to be a fit.
For me, and now aside from Hundley, because that's done and over with, I do believe that the Cardinals screwed the pooch on this one when they failed to acquire Case Keenum. Case Keenum, in my opinion, and I talked about this, he would have been the perfect of both worlds. He played for Cliff Kingsbury. He has starting experience. He's great in the locker room. He would make a great backup, and he's been a backup before. He's not going to be a problem being a backup. And from what we understand is he believed that he was going to land in Arizona until the Broncos traded him to the Washington Redskins for a swap of picks on day three. So they basically moved up around, and Denver's still paying half the salary. That's a deal the Cardinals should have done. They would have been like, they're going to pay Brett Hundley up to $3 million. They were going to pay, Mike Glennon, was it $2 or $3 million? They would have been paying $3.5 million for Case Keenum, who has starting experience, who has very good starting experience, who has played for Cliff Kingsbury. And the Washington Redskins just moved up around in the draft. The Cardinals could have offered a sixth round pick. The Cardinals could have offered him 3 7th round picks. They would have cared. In fact, I still want them to send 3 7th round picks away somewhere. But I think the Cardinals really messed that up. And I think they got caught. I'm sure they had to have inquired at the Broncos that they weren't particularly keen on, but the deal that went down with Washington, the Cardinals could have and should have done that.
Yeah, and like you said, Keenum would have made the most sense from a backup standpoint. He checks a lot of boxes. He's a guy that, like you said, he knows Kingsbury, the coach. He knows his system.
And he could have been the backup to either Kyler Murray or Josh Rosen. It wouldn't have mattered.
Right. And so all of those situations, you know, kind of lend themselves to he would have been the guy that fit best. But, you know, I don't think Hundley's a bad fit. I really don't. I think his success at UCLA in the Mazzoni offense kind of shows that he is an adept guy at the spread attack. And so we'll see how that fits in. I guess the biggest thing is we just really hope that he never really has to see the field.
That would be the thing. That'd be perfect, like he was last year in Seattle. Russell Wilson's backup, but never saw.
He didn't play a snap.
No, he didn't. He didn't
like at all. I knew he was on Seattle, and I was just like doing research, and I'm like, wait, he literally like didn't get on the field once.
Nope. So. Hey, maybe between Hundley and J.R. Sweezy, now maybe the Cardinals can glean just a little bit more insider information in Russell Wilson's like what is going through that head, and so they can actually beat them at home maybe this year, because they have no problem being competitive in Seattle, but they never can beat them at home.
Yeah, and so I mean that's the situation. Obviously, you and I both agree that Keenum was the ideal fit. I think they overplayed their hand, so to speak. I think they thought that they could wait it out until he became a free agent, and just it didn't work out.
Yep. Coming up next to the Rise of C-Red podcast, we're done talking about the actual moves the Cardinals have made. We're gonna try and talk about what they have not yet addressed. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We must say the Cardinals have done – they've done actually this offseason, the early offseason, and the pre-free agency stage, and then the legal tampering. What the Cardinals have done is solid. They have taken needs that they have and plugged in players who should be able to contribute right away. They got Charles Clay, tight end, big need. They filled it. They had right tackle and guard. They filled those with starters. second cornerback, Robert Alford. Then you add Brooks Reed. Okay, they didn't have a starter on the other outside linebacker position, and now they have two with Brooks Reed and Taylor Hicks. Nope, that's a singer on American Idol from years ago. Terrell Suggs. They add Jordan Hicks to replace Josh Bynes, whom they cut for some reason. I think because he was connected to the Wilkes era. But they now have many of their starting positions set. As of right now, the way things go, their offensive line is set. The quarterback is set. Their two tight ends are set between Charles Clay and Ricky Seals-Jones. The running back's set at 1-2. Your wide receivers are set at 1-2. Your edge is set at 1-2-3. Your linebackers are set at 1-2. Your four base defensive backs are all set. They are not set at all on the defensive line, except for Corey Peters.
No, I mean, they need, I would say, at least three defensive linemen, because as good as Peters is as a player, he's still up there in age. He's still a 60% snap guy. He's not a guy that that's going to get more than that. And so you need, two starters at the defensive end spots. And then you need another nose tackle that can play, that can spell Peters but give you the same type of productivity. And so all of those situations, I think they're, you're beginning to kind of lose out on players that fit those needs.
And there's some talent that gets signed. There are some really good players that they're no longer on the table. Sheldon Richardson gone. I mean, there's a whole bunch of talented defensive linemen that would have fit nicely that are gone now.
Right. I mean, you're just from a pure 34 standpoint, guys like Henry Anderson and Sheldon Richardson are both gone. They're both guys that would have been good fits as starters in this offense, this defense. They're guys like I can't pronounce his first name, but the Pecco kid out of Denver. He's a nice rotational nose tackle. Zach Kerr out of Denver, another nice rotational nose tackle, are both still available.
I will be honest. I'll be shocked if Pecco doesn't end up here unless he retires.
Right. And so when you look at it, and you and I have talked about this, but I feel like we're the only ones that have really talked about this, that there is just, it doesn't seem like there's an urgency to anybody when it comes to this defensive line. And that's just crazy to me because I think it's one of the biggest glaring holes on this team.
Remember how bad the run defense was. Corey Peters was good. Rodney Gunter was solid, but he might not be staying. So you've got an ACL torn Robert Kimdichie. You've got Corey Peters and you've got Pasoni Testini and Vincent Valentine.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean,
of you heard of Pasoni Testini? That's not an Italian dish. That's an actual player. And a Vincent Valentine, that is not something for February. They're players in the league, but they're rotational players, and they shouldn't be starting.
Right. And how many of them, I mean, honestly, let's be honest, how many of them are actually guys that should be on NFL rosters? That's another thing that we've talked about with this roster. Right.
They were back of the end roster guys
on the worst team in the NFL
last year.
Right. And so in the same sentence, are you really like wanting these guys back? Outside of Pierre and Peters, are there any guys that you really want back? I mean, Kimdichie will be back, but he's a now post ACL guy, type thing. So, and it's not like he's exactly. Well, and
that's the thing with Olsen-Pierre, that's not like they tendered him. So he's free to sign wherever he wants. They didn't give a restricted free agent tender either. I can understand why $2 million a year. He's the one guy I would have done it for. So there's no sure thing he's even coming back.
Right. But I mean, it also, I mean, he's probably a third wave free agent guy, wouldn't you say?
You'd think so. You'd think so. But I could totally see Betcher out in New York or Bowles in Tampa telling their GMs, hey, this guy is can be good, as we saw in 2017 when he had 5.5 sacks for the team. Was very good.
Right. And so, you know, the whole situation along the defensive line, it hasn't made a lick of sense of why they haven't addressed it at all. Why it wasn't one of the priorities coming in, because you and I both felt that it was a high priority along the lines of the offensive line.
Another position that they haven't even touched yet is wide receiver. And I'm going to cite John Gamadora here on Twitter. He said that they're going to address it in free agency, but because the talent out there is not that great, they're pretty much just going to bring in a guy. So Bryce Butler again. I mean, now let's be. I think there are some players who could make an impact. They might be a little bit older. I think Reggie Cobb would make a nice
Randall Cobb.
Reggie Cobb. What am I doing? Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb would make a nice fit because of his connection with Green Bay, because David Bry, his receiver coach, Tom Clements. In fact, when Tom Clements was offensive coordinator, Randall Cobb. Who is Reggie Cobb?
I don't know.
But Cobb had his best seasons, and he would make, I mean, he's an older version kind of a Christian Kirk, but would be a solid three. But other than that, they need to address the receiver position, because you don't want to pigeonhole one of your picks to have to be a receiver. And at the same time, they don't have a nickel corner right now, or they don't have a third corner that they know is going to play. So they haven't filled all their needs. They haven't found that third receiver who's going to be kind of their starter. They haven't filled their third corner, which is going to be a starter. And then they haven't filled that off that defensive line.
Yeah. And so, you know, they're kind of,
Reggie Cobb played in the 90s.
Yeah. Jess is old. Don't worry, guys. But you know, you look at it, they're at a point where you're talking about kind of outside of the defensive line, you're talking about non-starters, right? Like you're talking about guys that aren't going to push, so to speak, you know, the established or the guys that they brought in. So, you know, when it comes to like a slot corner, where how much of a priority are you going to put on that right now? You know, when it comes to a wide receiver in a market like this, like I could see a Tavon Austin being a fit here, based on the offense they're going to run and the creativity of Cliff Kingsbury. But how much are you going to want to pay him? Like, are you going to? I mean, look at what Cole Beasley got. Look at what Adam Humphreys got. Look at what Devin Funchess got for 1 year. $13 million. So, I mean, Austin's probably going to come in around $6-8 million, right?
You'd have to figure.
So, does the team want to give him 3 years, $18 million?
Oof.
And so that's what.
Here's the thing with Tavon Austin, he's a 1 year contract deal, because I think every deal he has signed has been a disappointment.
Right, and so that's where they're at right now. So. It's unfortunate, but at the same time, you know, they're a team in transition. They don't have a ton of cap space. I mean, they came in with, what would you say, about $37.5 million?
I think after the moves, basically 40, but then with Gil, yeah, that 37, 38 million, because they're salary cap cuts were a wash with what they had added with Gilbert. So, yeah.
So when you, you know, when you look at all that, it wasn't shocking that they're not able to kind of address all of this, all the issues that they have in one. And so they had to prioritize them. I think you and I would have probably prioritized them slightly differently, but it still doesn't change the fact that they had all this, the same, you know, we were on the same page in terms of what was needed. It's just maybe we go about it differently in addressing those in those positions. But like I said, I mean, can you really, I mean, you look at the money being thrown around for slot corners right now, you're talking about like $7 to $9 million for the top guys. They weren't going to pay that.
No, so, not with the money they have tied up in Alfred and Peterson. Yeah.
So you say all that, and you know, you just kind of know that where they're at right now, and what they're going to eventually, you know, address those positions, but it could be a couple, you know, it could be later in free agency. It could be at, you know, it during the draft, or it could be in free agency after the draft.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, in our final segment, we're going to talk about the Cardinals who've left and then react to some of the stuff that's going around in the league, because it is bonkers right now. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And for this final segment, the Cardinals have had some free agents leave. First of all, they had Antoine Bethea. He doesn't count for the compensatory picks because he was released. So Antoine Bethea gets 2 years with the New York Giants. He's reunited with James Betcher. Dayon Buchanan, he's headed to Tampa Bay for a year. And Ode Abushi, yes, he's a real person. He was picked up by the Detroit Lions. He started the last seven games of the season at guard, was pretty solid. He was a player that the Cardinals kind of did want to bring back, but he is now on his fifth team in 7 years, or 17 and 5th years. I think it's one of those two, and signs with the Detroit Lions. I am not crying about any of those losses, obviously, but they became expendable with the DJ Swearinger and Buddha moving back to safety. Dayon Buchanan didn't really have a fit here. He doesn't really fit what Vance Joseph does with linebackers. And Ode Abushi is a depth guy who can be replaced. Now, he's a capable backup who can't start. That's the one thing that you kind of like having on the back of your roster is. But he could be replaced by pretty much two dozen other players.
Well, and you and I talked about it just earlier. Like, when you look at it overall, they're in a situation where they can't prioritize backups. Because again, cash strapped, so to speak, and then they're cash strapped relative to the amount of needs that they have, if that makes sense. So they don't, you know, they have enough money to go make a splash, but they have so many holes to fill that they can't, you know, fill them all if they're going to make a splash, so to speak. And so, you know, when your big splash is a $9 million off-ball linebacker, that kind of just tells you where you're at from a standpoint of team building / you know, cap room. And so in the end, I think it makes sense that they're you let a guy, you know, you release a guy like Antoine Bethea. He ended up in New York. I think the biggest surprise for you and I was that he just continued to play football, right? Like, he wrote his book. You and I kind of wondered if, coming off this book sell, that if he'd retire and go on a tour and kind of, you know, put his book in the forefront, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but, you know, another team was ready to give him 2 more years. We thought many people thought that 3 years was too long 2 years ago, and now he's getting 2 more years on a deal. He's still incredibly productive, but he was definitely replaceable. He was part of the leadership on a defense that was terrible, and it was tied to Wilkes. And even though he was there with Betcher and Arians, he was a leader in that Wilkes locker room.
But on the other hand, too, this is, I mean, you're talking about he would have been on his third defense in 3 years. You know, and like you said, he's not a spring chicken anymore. We were shocked when he got 3 years to begin with. So going back to Betcher, kind of ending it, ending his career in New York. I mean, it's his career is going to be remarkable. Like, he's going to get at least a 14th season. That's, I mean, anybody, but you know, a late round pick like Bethea, that's incredible.
It really is. Now, what is going on around the league right now? This today was crazy. Odell Beckham, now a Cleveland Brown. Le'Veon Bell, while we're recording the show, the news broke about Le'Veon Bell signing with the Jets. I don't even know what to think of what's happening in the league right now. It is, we've been all on board with team chaos for the Cardinals. I don't know if I'm ready for the chaos that's going on in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of where the NFL is at this point, is that they're in a position where the players are kind of taking back some of the control of the league. They understand that they, especially kind of the top players, Khalil Mack, and I thought, I can't remember who said it, but I thought it was kind of poignant. A guy like Khalil Mack really started this. It wasn't Antonio Brown. It wasn't Le'Veon Bell. It wasn't, you know, it was Khalil Mack saying like, hey, look, I'm not going to play for you anymore. Like, you either trade me or I'll sit out here. You know, Le'Veon Bell set out because he didn't want to sign a franchise tag for the ninth straight year or whatever it was. But Khalil Mack just basically said like, look, I just don't want to play for you. So trade me. And now you're seeing that with Antonio Brown and the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're seeing that with Odell Beckham as he goes. I mean, he basically said, like, here's the three teams you can trade me to. Don't trade me anywhere else or I'm not going to show up. And I mean, we know that happened with Antonio Brown. They had a deal in place with the Buffalo Bills, and Antonio Brown said, okay, good luck with that, because guess what? I'm not going to show up. Like, whatever you guys want to do, that's fine with me, but I'm not going there. So, you know, it is what it is. I think when you look at those situations, you know, Pittsburgh's a place that is highly respected within the league, but I think guys like Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown have had enough. They want, you know, they want to be treated better, and they want to be treated as what they consider equal to what, you know, the treatment that Ben Roethlisberger is getting. When you look at it from the standpoint of Odell Beckham, you know, it's Eli Manning's team, and Odell has expressed his frustration maybe with that idea. And so what Eli meant to that franchise is obviously more important than what Odell means to them now. Because when you just put it in the aspect of current talent, I mean, there's not a single question who's the better player at this point, right? Like, we all know that Odell Beckham is way better than Eli Manning at this point of their respective careers. But, you know, Eli Manning has led his team to two Super Bowls. Odell Beckham, I think they've been to the playoffs once while he was there. So, I mean, that's kind of the situation at this point. The NFL is just, it's changing to more similar to the NBA in terms of kind of players dictating things of where they want to go, who they want to play with, and those types of situations.
Now, here are some of the crazy things. So we got Odell Beckham. He's now a Brown. We have Anthony Barr agreeing to a deal with the Jets and then reneging, which that's the thing about this legal tampering period. Those contracts don't count. There are not officially contracts. He goes back to Minnesota. Dee Ford, I don't know what the Chiefs are doing. Dee Ford traded to the San Francisco 49ers for a 2020 second round pick. Tyrann Mathieu gets $14 million a year. Good on him for betting on himself, by the way. That came that turned out really well for him. Some of the other things going on. Shoot. The Browns are loaded. And they look like the best team in the AFC North. Obviously, Pittsburgh is depleted. So on that team that was supposed to be great, now they don't have Antonio Brown. Now they don't have Le'Veon Bell. Now they have an older Ben Roethlisberger who is not playing at the same level. I just don't. What the Cardinals are doing is I have no idea what is happening around the rest of the league. The one thing that's kind of interesting is now with this Odell Beckham trade, this is something I just threw out there. The Giants now are in position to do some dealing with the Cardinals if that's the direction they want to go and if that's the direction the Cardinals want to go. They now have the 6th and the 17th picks in the first round, which means if they're dead set on a quarterback, they could use those two picks plus other ones to move up to number one. That puts the Cardinals in play. But if the Cardinals are, in fact, going to be in on Kyler Murray, then that means they're going to need to trade Josh Rosen. And the Giants have been a team that have been connected to the potential trade. Could they use that 17th pick? I'm not saying that would happen or that the Giants would even want to, but based on conversations you've had with people, that wouldn't be out of the ordinary there that Josh Rosen, that the Cardinals become trade partners for one of two deals as a result of this Odell Beckham trade.
Right, and that's the question is, like, when you look at it from the Giants' perspective, if they are interested in a quarterback, and by all accounts, they should be at this point. I mean, they've basically said that, okay, we're trading away our best or second best player on offense, whether or not you rank Saquon Barkley as the top. We need a quarterback. I mean, that's going to be the question is, do they get a quarterback in the draft? Are they interested in that? You know, Dave Gettleman's a terrible, terrible GM. So you and I have talked to people and their philosophy is basically like Gettleman doesn't trade picks. People I've talked to have said that the interest could be in Kyler Murray, that's part of the smoke of, you know, where when it started with his height questions and, you know, things of that nature, or when they brought up his height early, that they could be interested in Dwayne Haskins. So, you know, you look at all of that and you say, okay, would you trade one for 6 and 17? You and I have talked about this. I'm not comfortable with it. Like, let somebody else make that deal and take those two picks. But if that is something that they want to do, then, you know, then there's that. The other question is, you know, I was asked by a guy that covers the Giants was, do you think the Cardinals would be interested in 17 for Josh Rosen? I don't know what the answer is to that. I truly don't, but I would assume if they're serious about moving on from Rosen and drafting Kyler Murray, that getting a first round pick in general would be a win for them at this point, since they've basically torpedoed any type of leverage they have in this whole situation. So if they were able to get a first round pick for Rosen in the end, I think they would do that. So that's what the question becomes, is what do they want? What do the Giants want to do? What are they going to do? Like, are they, I mean, they can't, I mean, from a basic concept of things, they can't continue to build around Eli, can they?
Or they're just going all in for Tua next year.
Right. So, or Trevor Lawrence in 2 years. So, I mean, that's the hard part. I mean, it really is. When you look at all of these things, there are so many scenarios out. Allegedly, the Raiders were really hoping to be able to get Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and pair them with Kyler Murray. They didn't get Bell, so does that prohibit them from going to get Murray? Like, is that a complete package deal, or is that something they should be interested in? You know, it all creates these questions overall on what they do and how they play out the first pick. I would still say in the end the Cardinals sit pretty with being able to take Nick Bosa at the top.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Now, I think we've come to, and actually we've kept it pretty close to an hour. If this is something we don't normally do, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We've talked about a whole bunch of things, wrapped up free agency for now. Next week, I imagine we'll have a show where we can wrap things up even more. For sure, the Cardinals will have made a few more moves. We'll be able to talk about them. Those deals will have been finalized. We probably will have had some in introductory press conferences as well to find out a little more. We'll break those down in our next edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.